Victim, Survivor, Soldier, General, Part 2, Survivor. We've been discussing the four phases of recovering from abuse. These phases are drawn from Sun Tzu's Art of War, and as such, they are not spiritual in the sense of evaluating a person's walk with God. Such assessments are perilous anyway, in my opinion, and doomed to failure. Rather, based on Sun Tzu's description of the general, that person who can exercise benevolence on behalf of others, this four-phase assessment examines a person's mindset in terms of incorporating suffering and pain into a wider outlook based upon doing good. We've already looked at the starting point, victim, and today we look at the first step forward, survivor. In my work with adults who were abused as children by clergy, I have heard more than one declare, "I am not a victim, but a survivor." This comes as a statement of near disgust. The person often hates, or at least rejects, the person he or she used to be, that victim, that previous person who was frightened, used, abused, thrown away, may repel the new version of the same person. Even when this is not so, there's usually a clear demarcation in the mind of the survivor, a sense of being a different person now. Some even take on a different name or a new permanent nickname. Sharp determination, sharp revulsion, sharp anger, sharp desire, sharp doubt, and sharp grief all characterize the survivor mode. Of course, it's good to get away from being a victim under a cruel person's thumb. But even in my own experience, because I did face abuse, but not in church, the survivor stage was a vacuum that I kept trying to fill. After abuse, I had an empty life. I had an empty soul, and I tried to fill it with me. A survivor decides to be a survivor. As I have noticed when working with the Lambs, survivorhood begins with declaring, "I am now a survivor." Suddenly, this person who once lived in a world where everything was defined for him or her, where existence itself had to bear the stamp of the abuser, now is determined to make the decisions, to declare the parameters of his or her world. All that energy, all that grief, all that determination to take action gets poured into this new mold, "I am a survivor." But declaring "I am a survivor" is not the same thing as actually being a survivor, and even being a survivor is not necessarily a happy thing. Survivors are often reduced to near starvation. Their wounds never quite heal, they sleep in the rain, they hide from the bloodhounds. At the low end, being a survivor is better than being a victim only in that the person has left the abuse. The survivor stage, as far as I have seen, is a roller coaster. Highly ethical aspirations on the one hand, and a grim determination to do anything not to feel the old pains of abuse again. The person goes back and forth between a determined attempt at personal heroism and the temptation to wallow in anger, envy, and vituperation. In my opinion, suspicion, cynicism, and emotional hunger often guide the decisions and interpersonal relationships of survivors. Then again, they get stuff done. Pain can be fuel, and some survivors harness their pain and anger and really, really put them to work. The problem is that this frail shell of human form will collapse under that untiring jet engine of sorrow and anger. Probably the worst temptation of survivors is to see other people as selfish and self-serving. If survivors are not quite that cynical, they often see others as outsiders, the uninitiated, the people who do not have a clue about what their abuse is about or what abuse is like. So survivors can behave in an egocentric and uncaring manner. Survivors can hurt other people. Some of them do so frequently. In fact, some survivors realize that survival is easiest and quickest if it's done on the backs of others, and they start using other people, using them up, I should say, and then discarding them. Sorry to say, some survivors become abusers. It's a spectrum. Some survivors stay at the low end, punishing others for their own pain, nursing grudges, spinning their wheels and trying to mentally resolve what happened, constantly thinking about it. At the other end of the spectrum are those who embark on the decision-making processes of a person with a new life. At the very highest end are those who methodically work it all out to be a capable survivor. They get an education, pursue charges against their abuser if they can, study out religion to see what they really believe now that they are free, and probably get therapy to learn how to deal with the aftermath of abuse. And this, by the way, is not a spiritual assessment. There are Christian survivors on the low end and unbelievers on the high end. Every survivor of sexual abuse has to grapple with having been abused, and every survivor goes through dark valleys. But the key descriptor of a survivor is a self-centered person determined to survive. And that person may adopt kindness and generosity and do very well at them, but the person's key interest is survival, not altruism. I'm not placing blame here. A starving person will spend most of his or her day foraging for food. A smart starving person trains himself or herself to become very good at it in order to live. The most sophisticated of starvation survivors will form cooperative groups to gather food and share knowledge and experience on how to survive starvation. But the focus is survival. A very competent, high-end survivor of starvation recognizes that cooperation among a self-disciplined group, even agreeing to go on to half rations together for several weeks when food is at its scarcest, is still smarter than fighting over food, which is what a low-end survivor will do during famine. The enlightened self-interest of the ultimate survivor recognizes right and wrong and sides with what is right, usually. But even that is done in the interest of protecting the self, namely, surviving. The fact that there is more to life than survival is the threshold of the next step in recovery, the soldier.